Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to create a checklist, part one. The questions this cast answers are, what's so hard about writing a checklist? How do I write a checklist? And what is it important to include in a checklist?
Time is running out to register for our upcoming events. August 24th, we'll hold the next virtual effective communicator session at 10 a.m. Eastern. And September 3rd, we'll host the first of four virtual effective manager sessions at 10 p.m. Eastern. We've got events for those who prefer mornings, prefer evenings, prefer to live in Australia. We've got all kinds of virtual events. So check it out at manager-tools.com.
I found this out recently, Kate, when I had to write a checklist. In fact, I wrote several in over several days. And if you've listened to the cast about how to present on Zoom, those were the checklists I was writing. And you think, oh, how hard can it be, right? You're just going to write down what you do. And actually, writing a checklist that other people can use is surprisingly difficult, especially if you want to have something that's helpful and useful and that people can follow without asking you more questions. It's got to be accurate and it's got to be detailed and it's got to take account of the different ways people are using it and the different ways they approach things. It has to be formatted so that they can use it in the heat of battle, or in our case, right before they're presenting. And the best checklists are living documents that are being updated constantly, which ours is, because every time Zoom changes things, we have to change it again. So checklists are surprisingly complex and incredibly useful. So that's why we want to talk you through how to write a checklist.
It seems simple, and then it's definitely not. We're going to discuss today how to set up your checklist document, use headings and bullets to format, start from before the beginning, start writing, use annotated screenshots and descriptions, use commentary to provide additional help, test, and review and change. So we've got a lot to cover.
We have.
It should be really exciting because the best checklist will make your life easier. But this is like a checklist for your checklist. So
it is a checklist for your checklist, right? Because the first one is set up your checklist document. Mm-hmm. And in the show notes, if you're able to read the show notes, if you're a licensee, it says bullet one, open your word processing program of choice. And then underneath, indented, it says there's another bullet. It says Microsoft Office / Google Docs / Apple Pages / text document. And then underneath that, indented again with another bullet, it says, it doesn't matter which one you use as long as you can use bullets and indenting. And that was my checklist joke. But the beginning of this checklist begins with a checklist. But it's true. We're starting with opening a word processing document. And you probably thought, yeah, well, that was kind of obvious, right? But
I don't know. I've seen all kinds of stuff that people use. Like even notes and stuff, like different apps, they all have different ways of doing this. And it's not all of them are like checklist formatted.
Right. If it were you, you might have a handwritten checklist in a notebook somewhere just because it's only you that has to look at it. You might use a spreadsheet. That's another way to do a checklist. You could do it on a PowerPoint deck and have different points on different slides. There are all ways to do it. I think that any word processing document that allows you to use bullet points and indenting will give you a better checklist in the end. But this is about the assumptions you make about how people use your checklist. You know, I can't make the assumption. I have to start before the beginning. And I can't make the assumption that just because I would use a word processing document that everybody will. And because I think that's the best way to do it, that's included in the checklist.
Right, because we have to start before you begin the steps that have to be done, right? So we're starting way at the beginning. And hopefully we're saving you from choosing a different format, which might not be as helpful. And again, maybe you thought it's like super obvious that you'll need a program to do this, but it's not obvious. It's really not. And if you were talking, you mentioned before like a handwritten checklist. For those, it's harder because you have to make constant changes and keep it clear. It's harder to share. So there's different things that we're talking about that could be beneficial. And You have to work to remove your knowledge and perceptions and see the task in a way that the person using the checklist will see it. There's a classic, well, I say it's classic only because it's from when I was young. There's an exercise that they do here in children's elementary schools where they ask you to write down the instructions for making a peanut butter sandwich. And they, you know, kids often start with like, okay, so you put the peanut butter on one slice and you put the jelly on the other slice and you put them together. And then the teacher always says something like, well, where'd you get the knife? Like, did you use a knife? How did you do it? You're basically, by starting at the very beginning of the checklist, you're removing a lot of your own assumptions so that your assumptions around how it would be done, which you don't even think about, right? Your brain just gives you that answer automatically. They're not the same assumptions that someone else's brain provides them. So you have to think about how the other person's going to use the checklist, where they're starting from. And I think too, the idea of a checklist lets other people think that they can start from scratch, like scratch. So if you don't start at the very beginning, you'll have to change it forever and ever because you're just trapped in this cycle.
You'll have to keep going backwards, like adding more on.
Yeah, always have going back for another knife.
That example of a peanut butter sandwich is perfect because imagine walking into someone else's kitchen that you've never been in and then trying to make a peanut butter sandwich. Start from there. Like, you got to find the right drawer for the knife. Then you've got to find the right cupboard that has the plates in it. And now you've got to find the bread. And where do they keep their bread? Some people keep their bread in the freezer, which is odd, but that's where it is. Mine's in the pantry. My parents have a bread thing on the side. So, you know, the bread could be anywhere. I think that's a really good picture to have in your head when you start writing a checklist. Just remember, cake and peanut butter, you'll be fine.
You'll be fine.
And the thing about checklists, if you think this is going to be a one and done, that's the other misconception. It's just impossible to start writing a checklist and get to the end and have included all of the steps. And when Mark and I were talking about this cast, he told me this story that's in the Glenn Frey, in the Eagles documentary that's, I think it's on Netflix. He was talking about being in the early days and they had some music, but no songs. Like, they had the music, but they didn't have words and they hadn't put it together and so on. And they were sitting around going, well, how do you write a song? So Jackson Browne had the apartment below them. And so what Glenn Frey says is that every morning they woke up and they'd hear him, Jackson Browne, playing on his piano, coming through the floor, right? Early days, no money, cheap apartments, they can hear the music. And what would happen was he'd play one verse and then he'd play it again. And again and again, like 20 times in a row until he had it exactly the way he wanted. And then he'd move to the next verse. So you'd hear the first verse and the second verse, the first verse, the second verse, the first verse for 20 times until that was right. And then he'd move on. And he said it went on for hours. And he said, I don't know how many days we listened to this process until it suddenly hit us. That was how you wrote a song. That's how it's done. And that's kind of how checklists go. You write a bit. You test it, you write a bit, you test it, you write a bit, you do the next bit, and then you test it. And it takes a long time, a lot longer than you think it's going to take, a lot of iterations, more iterations than you think it's going to take, and it's going to be more difficult than you think. So if you have to write a checklist, immediately double the amount of time you think it's going to take, and probably double that again.
And we can still help you. It's going to be okay. We're scaring everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
We're terrifying everyone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. It's going to be really difficult. No, we're going to try and make it easy.
We're going to try to help you. The first thing that when you get started, we would consider that we would encourage you to consider is to use headings, indenting to organize. Headings, bullets, and indenting make the document easier to use and follow in the moment. So we're going to suggest that you use, you know, big headings and then also indent steps and things like that using bullets so that it's organized in a way that makes it like this part flows from that part kind of, and then there's a new step. It's a good way to organize.
It's a visual context. It's the headings and the bullets provide the metadata that you instantly take in of like, oh, that's important. That's subordinate to that just because of the size of the writing or where the indents are and stuff, because that's how we're used to seeing things.
Also pieces of the process. So like when you get to the for us, like when we use our checklist, when you get to the bottom of an indented portion, you know you're going back to, you're going to the kind of the next section. That's how ours works. Right. It's not going to be like that for everybody because we're using headings to divide a Zoom process into discrete parts. So we recommend you use headings to divide the process into discrete parts. So for our virtual conference delivery checklist, we have schedule the meeting in Zoom, create the invites in GCal. There's a portion for before the attendees arrive, 10 minutes before the start time, bringing the attendees in 5 minutes before the start time, and then 2 minutes before the start time. So each heading is a self-contained section of the checklist. And the headings give you kind of an orientation. They give the reader an idea what they're about to try to achieve. And if we're taking our car to be gassed, for example, the big sections would be drive to the gas station, get the gas, pay for the gas, and drive home. For your checklist, you want to think about the largest sections of the process and use those as your headings. You can use subheadings, but we would suggest no more than one level of subheadings per checklist. Because we're using indented bullets too, too many heading levels are more confusing than helpful. In the gas example, the subheadings for drive to the garage would be get out of the driveway, get out of the subdivision, drive on the main road to the gas station. It's true that if you have, you know, too much of what looks important, it can be really confusing. But headings allow users to skip sections that aren't relevant. For example, if it's the day of the presentation, the meeting's already been scheduled and the invites are created, so you can skip those two big headings. And I skip those two sections to just jump down to before the presenter arrives. And that way I have a kind of context for where I'm at.
Yeah. So when you're starting, it's helpful to have thought these headings through first and put them on your sheet and then kind of work in between them to put in the detail, because you want sections that are sort of the same size roughly. So setting up a meeting and creating a Google invite are sort of the same size. So if they were different, then the headings would mislead people because the headings are all the same and then the sections between them are much bigger or different sizes. That's not what's implied by the fact that there's a bunch of headings all at the same level. It kind of implies that they're more or less equal. So you have to have thought that bit through. And it's also helpful to think about those kind of portions to make sure that you get them all and to make sure that you really do start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And also to think about assignments too, right? Because if you're writing this checklist just for you, that's one thing. You're always the person who's assigned the task. But if you're writing this checklist and other people are going to use it, it's probably important to think through those big headings and also who's going to do what. And that could also help you think about the headings. If you know someone's going to do the first three headings, then you could break those out specifically.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want one heading to be two people.
Yeah.
You know, like one person have to take over in the middle, because it's hard for them to skip to that point. And it's also, it's just more difficult to start something in the middle or end something in the middle.
Right. So we talked about headings. Now we're talking about indenting, which is kind of oddly hard to say. So I'm probably going to botch it a few times. For the detailed tasks underneath your headings, use bullets. Bullets make structuring instructions, which is also hard to say, much easier.
Yes.
So bullets will make the instructions, the order and kind of format and structure of them easier for you. Sub-bullets and indenting will help the user to orient themselves. So indent tasks to show their relative place in the process. The further the indent, the more granular the instructions. So let's say you've got fill in the registration page. It's indented as far to the left as possible. Then there's add your name, which is a few spaces over to the right. Directly beneath that same level of indention, add your address. And then over again a few spaces. This can be your term, time, or home address. The term time comment is indented further to the right than adding your address because it's a detail for adding your address. And not everyone would need it, but it is more granular, right? It's down into exactly what you would put in that field. And then you go back up a level in indention to add your phone number. So you're just helping the user know how far down in the weeds they are by a visual example of indention.
Right. Indention is a funny word. Yeah. So the indents also tell someone how big a task this is, right? Fill in the registration page is way to the left. And that's actually a big task that's got a bunch of smaller tasks underneath it. But add your phone number, for example, because it doesn't have any sub-bullets, is probably just one action. So you want to end up with a bullet line for each action.
Mm-hmm.
And you may need to, depending on where you start, how many indents you have. And it kind of doesn't matter how many indents you have, as long as the sentence wrapping isn't providing confusion as well. If you get too far to the right, the sentence mm-hmm. doesn't fit on the line, and then the wrap confuses the structure. So that's the only other consideration.
Yeah.
And so here's another example. If you were attaching slides to a calendar invite, right? So you've got to go into the calendar, open the invite, and attach some slides. So in terms of indenting, you would say attach the slides. And then a subtask to that is click the upright paperclip, right? Because if you're going to attach something, you have to click that paperclip thing that's on the invite.
Yeah.
And then underneath at the same level, attach, and then indented some more, a PDF version of the presenting deck, and then on the next line, the same indention, a PDF version of the agenda. The tasks of attaching slides are click the upright paperclip and attach something. And so they're at the same level. And then the two PDFs are subtasks or more granular information. This is exactly what you're attaching to that task of attach.
Live, laugh, and love. You've probably seen this feel-good phrase on pillows, plaques, and greeting cards, all in an effort to affect a positive feeling and outlook. The manager tool's spin on it would be live, learn, and lead. We all know that management's a discipline, and once you acquire the skills, they become second nature, allowing you to lead and focus more time on external factors, such as risk and competition. You may want to consider our effective manager training, virtually delivered, broken up into 4 digestible sessions, where up to 30 folks can get the manager tools personal license and the organization gets measured visibility into the Trinity rollout. It costs an affordable $15,000 for the full engagement plus licensing to your group. Super valuable for those who are geographically dispersed, management teams that don't typically get together physically, etc. Contact Maggie at manager-tools.com or check it out on our website at manager-tools.com/organizations.
The other thing you can add is commentary. So that's things that are helpful for the reader to know, but aren't an actual task. So for example, in that one of attaching PDFs, you might do another line and another indention and write underneath, this is where you find the slides, so that they know where to find the ones that right. they've got to attach.
We're really elucidating. No, that was right. Something that people inherently know, and yet I think don't often ruminate on. When you see a sub-bullet, you know that the sub-bullet only applies to the bullet above it, right? They're linked. So going down a sub-bullet means this only applies to the bullet right above it. And I think we all know that because we've all looked at PowerPoint for so long. And we're just reminding you that for a checklist, that can be really valuable to you, because if you're going to attach these PDFs apply to the attached bullet, not the next bullet beneath it, because they're sub-bullets of the attached one. And it's something you know inherently and will probably want to use when you're creating your checklist, because other people know it too, but it's probably not something that you really thought a lot about until now, because why would you?
It's a convention, right?
Yeah.
I was reading some notes that Sarah had written, some hot wash notes for one of her conferences, and she'd written a circle with a line through it, and the line started on the right and went to the left. And I looked at it for a while and I didn't know what it meant. And I Googled it and I still didn't know what it meant. And because I'm currently in the UK, what comes up is any sign that's a not, so don't go this way or don't do this, is a red circle with a line, but the line goes the other way from left to right. So I was still confused. And in the end, I had to call her and say, what does that mean? And she said, it means not or don't, or it's like any negative. which is confusing. Apparently, that's the way they do it in Canada. But there is a convention here, and there's a convention, I guess, in most countries that follow the British way of driving signs, that we all know a circle with a line right to left means don't do this, wherever it is. And that's kind of like the bullets. It's just something you absorb because it always means the same thing because there's a convention for it.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing, but it works. I mean, you can use it here. You can utilize the convention here in your checklist. So sub-bullets get added under the task to which they refer, and we'll come back to that. Now that your document is set up, though, you're going to move it to one side of the screen so that you can type out the checklist as you do the process on the other side. So you're going to do like a split screen kind of deal that allows you to...
Let's hope you are not on a tiny laptop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear. You can always handwrite it and then type it in later, I guess. But we're going to start from the beginning. So when you start writing the checklist, begin with a completely blank slate. Don't have the program you need open. Don't have a browser open. Don't set up any documents. You know, close all your windows and all that stuff. In order to be useful, a checklist has to start at the beginning. It's kind of like that kitchen analogy. When you go into someone else's kitchen, you don't know where the bread is. Imagine that the next time this checklist is used, it's because you're sick at home, right? Not with something serious.
Yeah, just something minor. Because that person can't ask you any questions. You're not nearby. There is no help. There's no phone a friend on your checklist. That's what you've got to imagine, that you are not going to be able to help them by filling things in. Everything you know has to be in the checklist.
Yeah, so your colleague's never done it before.
Otherwise, you will spend your entire time answering people's questions, and that's not the point of a checklist.
Right. Also, because if you're going to do any of this on a computer, the way you use your computer and the way you another person uses their computer is so different. And you don't even, again, it's those assumptions. I was on a share screen with Sarah a couple weeks ago, and we had to look something up in our website. We've got like the admin tab, right? And so I said, okay, well, just look it up. Look that person's stuff up for their conference. And she went to a part of the website I've never even seen. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, like, what is this? And I said, is that how you do that? And she says, yeah. And I said, well, why wouldn't you just use this search function right here, this button? She's like, oh, I've never even heard of that. I never use it. I use it daily. I use it every day, and she's never used it. So just, that's our own website that we both use every day, the difference there. So think about that. And I know, you know, like people use like, I don't know what that slider is called that allows you to like switch between programs. People use that a lot.
Oh, I think it's shift tab and then keep tabbing and it goes through the programs on a Mac. Yeah. I never use that.
I never use that. A lot of people do. Or it's kind of like, if you've ever built a macro, you know. But let's imagine you're homesick, so they can't phone a friend. Your colleague's never done it before. They're in front of their computer screen. That's where you have to start. That's probably what you think of as before the beginning, because you get yourself set up to start the process before you even start it. For someone who doesn't know, you have to start at the beginning because they don't know how to even set up. They don't know what programs to use. You have to tell them, open your browser, launch the software, get an account here. When there are multiple ways to access information, just like Sarah and I, people start from somewhere you've never started from that have no idea it even exists, which is what we found with our Zoom checklist, right? Some of us start in the app. Some of us click the link in the calendar invite. Our checklist started with click yes to join, and half of us didn't even have that button because it depends. Like if you open Zoom, it has a calendar and you can start a meeting from there, or you can start it from Gcal or Apple Calendar.
Or the Zoom website.
Right.
There's so many
different ways.
Yeah. I've been on so many Zoom calls since the COVID thing. And so many times somebody said, how do I do this? And you say, you go to the bottom of your screen and you press this. And they say, I don't have that. And you can't tell whether they can't see it because it's new to them and they just don't know where to look, or they don't have it because so many versions are. There's so many versions and they're all different. So you have to make sure that everybody's starting from the right place. You have to make sure everybody's in the same kitchen to begin with. Otherwise, your instruction for where the knives are is not going to work.
Absolutely. For other checklists, not like ours, it might be the first instruction could be creating an account or getting the supplies or answering a question. If you don't include all of that, people following the checklist will get confused and it won't go as smoothly for them because they don't know, like, for example, let's say you're packing something. They don't know you need a box cutter or something like that. Mm-hmm. We're building fluidity. We're building skippability into the checklist using the headings. So it doesn't matter if 95% of the time that section at the beginning won't be used. At least it'll be there for the 5% of the time that you need it. Part of the checklist that we're using, like you mentioned before, I don't use the whole first section of it. I skip straight to the presenter part. And there's a section about getting ready. And I've already usually done that. That isn't true of when I first started using it, though. Part of what we're doing is teaching them the process so that they can do it more smoothly.
That's a really good point.
And you can't know to do that stuff first that if it's not in there and you don't learn it. Like, you're learning from the checklist. And if that's the case, having every single step in there is going to help them to learn and to be able to, you know, have confidence. That's the other thing too. You get really nervous, like, did I do all the steps? And you can really only know that if they're all there.
Yeah, the fact that some people, once they've started using it, will not need parts of it doesn't mean that you should leave them out, because they will need parts of it when they're learning, as you said, or if somebody new comes, or if you're out sick and someone has to, it's your checklist, you do it. And so you think, oh, well, I don't need to remind myself to do X and Y because I always do that. I know it. If you don't put that in the checklist when you're sick and the person tries to do it, they're going to miss that section. And then the next part won't make any sense because, you know, you didn't tell them to open the fridge to get the butter and they're trying to butter their sandwich and they're like, wait a minute, I don't have any butter to butter with it because you missed something out. You really have to go through every single detail. And if you're a high D like me, it's going to be excruciating. And if it's excruciating, it's probably at the right level. Like at the beginning, we said it'll take twice as long as you think it will. You have to probably go down a level deeper than you think you do in order to make something that's really useful, really helpful, and which doesn't require people to have help to use it.
My favorite kind of just like movie moment about computers is watching. It's in the American version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and she's watching him try to get to something on his computer, and she's a computer genius and he's not. She's standing behind him as he tries to navigate out of his photographs on his computer and into a different program. And he's like, so I do this and then I click here and then and she's standing behind him just with her eyes closed in what's obvious, like excruciating pain because of course she would have like 7 shortcuts. You can only have shortcuts if you've done it a bunch of times.
Yes. And the, you know it takes time, and you know that you want a shortcut for it.
Right, and you have to, you're trying to support this person getting to a place where they can create their own shortcuts.
That's a really good point. Okay, so you've got your document ready, you're all set up, and then next week we'll tell you what to do when you start writing. We'll be back next week with the rest of this guidance.